WNYC with 30 issues in 30 days, issue 14, affordable housing in New Jersey. You know, we're almost done now with our two-week-long focus on development issues in the New York City mayoral race and New Jersey governor's race. While everyone else is talking about the horse race, we did five New York development segments last week. We're doing one a day for New Jersey this week. And a court ruling in August about affordable housing in New Jersey is definitely an issue in the race and is making for some strange political bedfellows. The state appeals court decided that developers can overturn local zoning rules to build affordable housing projects. Now, affordable housing advocates are happy. Opponents include Republicans in the legislature and environmentalists. The background here, though, is that New Jersey has one of the most progressive affordable housing laws in the country, at least on paper. So we will explain, and we will hear what Corzine, Christie, and Daggett all have to say to see where they stand. And with me now is a guest suggested by one of you on our 30 Issues Wiki. He is Peter Kasabak, Executive Director of New Jersey Future. That's a not-for-profit that advocates for smart growth and transportation choices. Peter, welcome to WNYC. Peter, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yes. Glad we got you. By way of background, can we start with the legendary Mount Laurel court decision from years ago? For people who don't exactly know or have heard it all their lives growing up and aren't sure what it has to do with them, what was that and how has it shaped the affordable housing landscape in the state that we have today?
Sure. In a nutshell, what Mount Laurel said was that towns throughout New Jersey had an obligation to provide a realistic opportunity for affordable housing within their borders. And that's what the court said. And then the courts turned it over to the legislature, who came up with the Fair Housing Act that laid out a series of steps the towns should follow in order to meet this fair share obligation.
Has it worked? Do you like Mount Laurel? Would it be right to characterize the Mount Laurel system as one of the most progressive affordable housing laws in America?
That would be accurate. It would also be accurate to say that it has been very successful in producing affordable housing when compared to the rest of the country. It's also fair to say that it is not a well-loved system in New Jersey.
Because?
Partly because it's effective, and partly because in trying to produce affordable housing in New Jersey, it costs money, and everybody's going to have to put in a little bit of money in order to make that happen. And when you start asking people to put in their little bit of money to make something happen, they'd rather not.
So, listeners, you're definitely in on this. Have you or your town or your city been affected by the Mount Laurel system and the Council on Affordable Housing system? Has it helped you actually obtain affordable housing? 212-433-WNYC. Important conversation. Salient to the race. Wait till you see how against the current system and the recent court ruling Chris Christie is in a clip we're going to play. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And what would you like to see in terms of affordable housing in New Jersey and policies to create it? It's Jersey Affordable Housing in our 30 Issues election series. Right now at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you live in a city, in a suburb, in an exurb, or anywhere else, get in on this conversation with Peter Kasabak, Executive Director of New Jersey Future. And what was the court ruling in August, Peter? Maybe everyone was at the shore when this came down and didn't hear about it.
Well, the court ruling, in New Jersey Future's opinion, has been considerably blown out of proportion. What the court ruling simply said was that in zoning cases, affordable housing is to be treated as an inherently beneficial use, which the court has upheld for the last 30 years. This simply means that a zoning board can't reject a zoning variance or application simply because they think they have enough affordable housing in their town. They can reject it for lots of other reasons, but not simply because they feel like they've already done enough affordable housing.
So the way I characterized it in the introduction, how accurate is this? As press reports have described it, the state appeals court decided that developers can just overturn local zoning rules, ignore local zoning rules to build affordable housing projects.
Not accurate. If you followed that story, as the story sort of wound down past the hype, you realized that the town and other professionals came out and started to actually interpret what the court had said, and they basically just reaffirmed what's already been the case. You know, a developer is not going to be able to come in and build a 200-unit development and include a couple of affordable units and overturn zoning, you know, based on this ruling.
They can do what based on this ruling?
Based on this ruling, it would allow them to come to a town, and typically in the case that you're looking at, the court case, that was 4 units of affordable housing proposed by a nonprofit developer. So that nonprofit developer came in and said, here we have something that's zoned for, you know, another use. Affordable housing is an inherently beneficial use, so therefore we think that this housing can go on this site. The zoning board doesn't have the ability to say, we don't think that's a good use for this site. They may not like it for lots of other reasons. It's similar to a church. If a church wanted to locate on a site that wasn't zoned for a church, the town doesn't have the ability to say, we don't like churches here. We don't want any more churches in our town. It's an inherently beneficial use. They may come up with other reasons that it doesn't work on that site or in that location, but they can't simply say it's not a good use.
Alexis in Red Bank, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I personally have friends that live in Mount Laurel projects. There's a large developer here, Hovnanian. A lot of people are familiar with that developer.
Mm-hmm.
He builds big complexes, and then he's got a segment of them that he must, you know, designate as Mount Laurel, you know, according to the town's requirements.
And how affordable is affordable in those cases?
It goes according to what your income is. I think the units can range from 30,000 upwards to 100,000. Those are for townhomes.
Uh-huh.
My friend happens to be a single mom. It works beautifully. Her, you know, it's a lovely community. It does nothing to deter from the surrounding community. You wouldn't even know which units are Mount Laurel and which aren't. It's a fantastic program.
So you're very much in favor of this. Good experience that your friend has with it adds to the quality of life and ability to live in New Jersey.
100%.
Thank you for your call. James in Bergen County may see things a little differently. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you? I work for a real estate developer in the state of New Jersey, and my experience with the affordable housing regulations are that when you look at a piece of property, it's economically viable for a development. The town wants the development. The people around it want the development. But when you look at it through the lens of the cost of the affordable housing that's required to be put on the site, that, you know, the property can't work. So they sit stagnant for years, and eventually it ends up in a lawsuit. And at the end of the day, the only people that really win are the attorneys, and the property never gets built.
So you think there's less housing altogether and less affordable housing altogether in New Jersey as a result of the affordable housing system?
Well, I think the program has created affordable housing, and that's definitely a positive for it. But I think that the affordable housing regulations have to be looked at very carefully because they're defeating themselves. You're not building affordable housing if you're not building.
Peter Kasabek, what about that?
There's always a balancing act between the regulations that require affordable housing and what the economics of any particular deal can accommodate. In that example, what should happen is the value of that land should go down, and when the economy starts moving prices up, that project becomes feasible. But every project is case by case.
James, thank you very much. And has it discouraged the construction of housing? Because part of the core of the issue when we talk about housing in New Jersey and development in New Jersey, and tomorrow's segment is going to be all about smart growth in the suburbs, and Chris Daggett is going to be one of our guests. But, you know, it seems like housing is going up everywhere. When you have the open space debate, the preservation of farmland and stuff like that, that all that ever seems to happen in New Jersey is tracts of land are bought up and additional housing is developed. So when James talks about all this stuff that isn't being built because the laws are prohibitive, how true can that be?
Well, you've hit on a really important point. I mean, New Jersey is the most developed state in the nation. Each of our pieces of land that are left are in play. You know, there's lots of interest groups who want to see it either preserved or developed. And when you have that situation, prices start to go up. And that's why we need to have better state planning. And it sounds like you're going to be discussing this tomorrow, but we need a housing policy that talks about where housing goes, how much of it, and it has to be linked back to our state plan that talks about where we grow and where we preserve.
And Carlos in Passaic says his town, his city has lots of affordable housing, but developers are gaming the system. Carlos?
Yes, Brian. Your guest is not telling something true about affordable housing in New Jersey. This is a loop that the law was created for developers. They build the affordable housing, then 3 years later, under the law, they come and change those affordable housing to nothing. So that should be stopped. And that's the reason some of the zoning city, they got it smart and they said, we're not going to let this happen in our town, like Passaic. People came up there and built affordable housing. They got grant under the corrupt mayor or corrupt politicians, and then they changed it to the houses in the market value.
So Peter Kasabek and Carlos, thank you a lot. Can they do that? Can they just keep it affordable for a certain period of time, and then they can charge market rates?
If the projects, if the housing units are built either using state funds or under the Council on Affordable Housing guidelines, they can't lift those deed restrictions easily.
Andy in Toms River wants to know, where is all this affordable housing? Hi, Andy.
Hi. I guess, after listening to the other callers, it sounds like since New Jersey is so densely populated, unless you get more industry and better jobs, it's not going to be feasible to build much affordable housing because, there's a limited amount of space, it sounds like.
Thank you, Andy. Barry in Ocean Township, you're on WNYC. Hi, Barry.
Hi. One of the big deals in New Jersey, of course, is our property taxes. And, the Asbury Press just ran probably 5-6 articles about it. And I firmly believe that one of the reasons that the people are constantly against consolidation to lower the taxes is because they love these exclusive communities. There are a lot of communities in New Jersey. Some are only a half a square mile. And I don't know how it'd be possible to build, fair housing in a place, for example, like Tavistock down near Haddonfield. And I think that's the primary reason why we pay high taxes.
Yeah. Barry, thank you. And that's a really important question. We talk about the consolidation question a lot, and Peter Kasabek from New Jersey Future, if the Mount Laurel system requires that every municipality have some affordable housing, why doesn't that mean that there's all kinds of affordable housing in all kinds of communities in New Jersey, since there are like 600 different localities?
The way the system has actually been implemented, it's more of a voluntary system. So towns can voluntarily come under the Council of Affordable Housing, present a plan, and show how they're going to meet their affordable housing obligation, and then they become part of that system. Or they can choose to be outside of that system. And if they're outside of that system, they're subject to something called a builder's remedy, where a developer could come to their town, say, you haven't met your affordable housing obligation, we're going to sue you, and we're going to win, and we're going to have this piece of property in your town turned into mixed income housing.
Also joining us for a few minutes to unpack the candidates' positions on this is Peter Woolley, Executive Director for Fairleigh Dickinson's Public Mind Poll and Professor of Public Affairs at Fairleigh Dickinson. Professor Woolley, thanks for joining us on WNYC.
My pleasure to be here.
And on the wiki that we set up for listeners to contribute to the development issues series here, a contributor pointed us to a poll that you had done on affordable housing as a campaign issue. It was done in the spring for the Republican primary. Have you followed up on the polling? Do you have any sense of how the issue is playing in the general election?
We haven't followed up on the polling because what we discovered the first time around is really that it's not an issue that's really amenable to this kind of general election campaign. In other words, all five Republican primary candidates were out front criticizing COA. Each one was trying to be more critical of COA than the next.
And COA is for
Council
on Affordable Housing. That's the system, right?
That's the system, right. But really, there was a disconnect there between what the candidates were saying and how much knowledge the voters have about it. So really, when you ask voters whether they've even heard of COA, you find about 1 in 4 say they've heard something about the Council on Affordable Housing. When you ask them whether they've heard of the Mount Laurel decision, only 1 in 4 have heard of that landmark New Jersey Supreme Court decision. When you ask them, do they support, generally speaking, the notion of affordable housing, you also find that a majority support it. And that, in the end, makes it very tricky, then, for the campaigner, because in a small, attentive audience of suburbanites who've come out to your primary speech, you can go through the very arcane details of the Council on Affordable Housing. But it's very difficult, then, to carry that forward into a general election.
Nevertheless, take a listen to Chris Christie from the Candidates Forum on Channel 13 just the other night. Mm-hmm. He has pledged to go after the Council on Affordable Housing, and he was asked how he would do that with a Democratic Party-controlled legislature.
The Council on Affordable Housing is an aftermath of some Mount Laurel decisions and the Fair Housing Act, which sets up what each town must be required to build in terms of number of units of affordable housing in their town and the rules for setting that up. It's been the worst idea Trenton's had in a long time, which is saying something for Trenton, because it's had a lot of bad ideas. But here's what we would do to answer his question directly. Mm-hmm. If we couldn't come to an agreement with the legislature, I would line item veto out the funding for the Council on Affordable Housing. If they have no funding and no staff, they can't enforce what they're supposed to be doing. We need to come up with a new affordable housing scheme in New Jersey.
So, Peter Woolley, those are strong words. He is pledging to line item veto COA out of existence. Are the other candidates as forceful in their tone, or do they even agree with his critique?
I think all the candidates have made it clear that they find COA less than ideal and that they think that some substantial changes need to be made. They've not been as sweeping in their criticism as Chris Christie is, or, by the way, as Steve Lonergan, who Chris Christie defeated in the primary. But Chris Christie and all the candidates really have to play it carefully, because even with Chris Christie, in one sentence he says he will eliminate it, but he's very careful to conclude by saying we will have a new affordable housing scheme. And that is because, in general terms, the public thinks that affordable housing is a good thing. It's one of those names that carries. More specifically, though, you have to realize that behind affordable housing is not just a public that thinks that affordable housing is a good thing, but there are deeply entrenched interest groups involved in supporting COA and, by the way, in suing towns that don't meet their COA obligations. And that Correct. Would include, for example, the New Jersey Builders Association, Building Contractors Association, real estate associations. The list is very, very long, and they're all big businesses. They're not ACLU types.
Chris Daggett recently told the Star-Ledger, we've got to rethink the whole COA obligation and whether it should effectively fall just on the development community. We ought to be putting it more where jobs are and where access to mass transportation is, rather than have every community actually have to build homes across New Jersey. It just contributes to suburban sprawl. And again, Chris Daggett will be here tomorrow to talk about that and other things. Peter Woolley, just give us a line then on the Corzine position.
Well, the Corzine position is that there have been some problems with COA, that these need to be ironed out, that the state needs affordable housing, that it's been, on the whole, a very successful enterprise, but it needs some tweaking, and that's as much as he'll concede.
And Peter Kasabak from New Jersey Future, our 30 Issues Wiki, where listeners help produce the series, someone wrote there about the group Hands Incorporated, which has been doing some work in Orange and East Orange to create affordable housing and create an arts district. This says the recession helped move the Luna Stage Theater Company from Montclair to the West Orange-Orange border, and they've also tried to get artists to take up residence in an old Orange hat factory, among other projects. Does this signal, and we're just about out of time, that the bursting of the housing bubble may actually be good for the cause of affordable housing?
I don't know that it would necessarily be good for the cause of affordable housing. It may be good to help revitalize areas that, you know, were going to be lower on the list of revitalization. But I don't know necessarily that it's going to help affordable housing. Our prices in New Jersey have held pretty steady compared to the rest of the country. I did want to point out, though, that when we talk about affordable housing, We keep talking about producing lots of new housing, and COA and the affordable housing system in New Jersey don't require that all of this be new housing. We also have the ability to renovate housing, the ability to convert market-rate housing to affordable housing. So there's lots of ways of meeting affordable housing needs beyond just going out and building more houses.
30 issues in 30 days, issue 14, Affordable Housing in New Jersey. Peter Kasabak from New Jersey Future, thank you. Peter Woolley from the Public Mind Poll at Fairleigh Dickinson, thank you.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow, issue 15, Smart Growth in the Suburbs, including an interview with Chris Daggett. Brian Lehrer in WNYC.